Glad to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. We are going to take a little trip around Lake Superior for the next 45 minutes or so with Connie LeMay, editor of Lake Superior Magazine in Duluth, Minnesota. It's a bi-monthly publication dedicated to life on Lake Superior. The magazine also publishes the annual Lake Superior Travel Guide, a trip planner, travel companion, and a number of books as well. And we can talk about some of those, too, as we move along today and visit with her. You may have some questions about what's going on in or around Lake Superior, and you may have some questions about the magazine, too. So we hope you'll join us. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, reach us at 263-1890. 263-1890, and you can email us at talk@wpr.org. So you can do it that way as well. Connie LeMay with us by phone. Hi, Connie. Thanks for being with us today.
Hi, Larry. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Boy, Lake Superior Magazine has been published for, 20 years now, isn't it?
Actually, we'll be hitting our 30th year in 2009, so we're at 30, about 28 years.
28 years. How long have you been editor?
9 years.
Long time.
Yes.
Has it been fun?
As my publisher points out, it's the longest I've ever worked at any one job. So, yeah. Yes, I think I'm an institution settled here now.
Well, why do you stay? Why do you like it?
Oh, well, one of the things, of course, is I'm originally from Duluth, Minnesota. And so for me, it was a chance to get back to my hometown, which I absolutely adore. Mm-hmm. After being away for 15 or 20 years doing other things. The other thing that's so great for me about the magazine is the chance to focus on something I really love and adore, which is Lake Superior in this region.
Yeah, it's a beautiful area, isn't it?
Oh, it is indeed. And I chuckle sometimes because there are a lot of people who say folks who grow up here just don't appreciate the lake. And I know when I first moved away from Duluth for the first time to go to the university in Minneapolis, that I actually started having dreams about the lake.
Uh-huh.
So I think once it's outside your horizon, your body physically goes, wait, something's not right.
Well, I tell you what, we already have callers online with questions. But before we do that, talk a little bit about Lake Superior Magazine itself. And, you know, what do you normally include in it?
The magazine is, as I joke, one of the few watershed magazines rather than a regional magazine, because we actually kind of created a territory, which is around Lake Superior. So we cover Ontario, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota as they relate to Lake Superior. We have a wide range from maritime stories and boat stories all the way through lifestyle and living in the North Country. So it's a huge range of things we're able to cover.
Which makes it fun.
It does. And we also get to throw in a few characters that we get to meet around the lake.
There are no characters around Lake Superior, are there?
No.
No, not a one. Oh, my goodness. Well, I tell you what, Sandon Edgerton has a question for you.
So wonderful.
Let's go there. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks, Larry. Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
So, Connie, I'm not really familiar with your work yet, unfortunately, but I do know Lake Superior is a beautiful place, and we should all really be proud of it. It's, you know, this whole region is unique to the whole earth. So I was really shocked and concerned when I picked up Nuke Watch Quarterly, their fall 2007 issue. It says that there was over 1,400 barrels of toxic and probably radioactive chemicals that were dumped into Lake Superior by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. And I guess they're still out there. And, you know, it says between 57 and 62, they were dumped out there. And one of these acknowledged sites is within a mile of Duluth's drinking water intake. And, I mean, shouldn't we all be, like, outraged? And, I mean, shouldn't this be a national cleanup started tomorrow?
Yeah, you know, and I think, actually, Connie, you have something in your November issue about it.
Yes, and I guess one of the things is calling it toxic and radioactive may be a little premature in stating it, because they have brought up, they've only brought up 9 of these barrels, and obviously 9, I don't know if that represents nearly 1,500 barrels. But the ones that were brought up were a combination of ash, and it's not that there aren't chemicals in them, there are. But a lot of them are scrap relating to munitions. The barrels, my understanding is that the barrels were dumped as part of a secret army removal of munitions and parts, especially during the height of the Cold War, but certainly during the Cold War, and so this was a way to keep the technology in part secret when they were getting rid of these munitions, or at least that's what the take is. Yeah, that's what the governmental take is. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency has done some testing on the barrels that were recovered. But what I think is really a really neat turn to the story is that a small band of the Lake Superior Chippewa, the Lake Superior Ojibwe, the Red Cliff Band there in Wisconsin, are trying to get federal monies to bring up all the barrels. They want all of the barrels out of the lake, and they're in the process of, they've gotten 2 grants that will allow them to do both mapping of where these barrels actually are, sometimes going back to the old documents, the old government documents, and finding out where things are, and then actually starting to do removals and testing. And this is, we're talking several millions of dollars worth of effort, but the band is really adamant and very anxious to try and make it happen where these barrels are removed from the lake. And so that's definitely something that will be on the horizon, and also will need huge amounts of support, not just, obviously the band itself is not able to afford this sort of a project.
Yeah.
Is there any way we could support that band of Ojibweys, did you say it was?
Yes, it's the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior Ojibwe, and they're in Red Cliff, which is very near Bayfield. One of my suggestions would be to try and contact through the band and see if there's anything you can do in terms of support. Also, this obviously is going to involve federal money, so if this is an area you're interested in, it's certainly one that you could contact your federal legislators about and say, look, this is an area we think should be handled.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks.
You bet. Thank you for the question.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call. As long as we're talking about some issues, and that one's nice to see that being addressed. In your November issue, you point out that we have a new record low reached for Lake Superior's monthly average water level, I believe it is. In August, it was 600.5 feet, and that's almost, 2 feet lower than you'd expect to find something like that?
Yes. Yeah. The lake has consistently been on the edge of these record lows. And actually, in an upcoming issue, in our February-March issue, we're going to be taking a real broad look at lake levels and some of the things that have been happening around that. One of the things that's coming up is that we're not actually dealing with apples to apples when we talk about the record lows, in fact, because between the record low years, which are in the 1920s, 1925 and 1926, are when all of the monthly record low levels were set. But since then, we've actually had diversions into Lake Superior of water, which has changed the water level. And so some of these records, we're taking a look at how they actually were set back then and what we're actually dealing with now.
Interesting. Casey in Waupaca has a question or comment. Casey, hi.
Good morning. How are you guys today?
Great. Thank you for calling.
I would like to ask the person about my 2 favorite points of interest in northwestern Wisconsin. One is a little secret camping place called Little Girl Point, and the other one is the little beautiful town of Port Wing, Wisconsin. I'd like to know if you've been to either one of those places.
All right, Little Girl Point. and Port Wing, Wisconsin. Connie?
Yes, well, I've definitely been to Port Wing and haven't specifically visited Little Girl Point, but the whole shore along Wisconsin and lakes, along Lake Superior is absolutely wonderful and beautiful, and I love all of the little towns along the way there. One of the things about Port Wing is their fish boils in the summer, which are real fun. That I believe it's on Fridays they have fish boils in town.
It is a beautiful place. I like Port Wing too. Thanks, Casey. Appreciate it. And we don't know much about Little Girl Point, but maybe somebody else does too. Gary and Edgar, it's your turn. Hi, Gary.
Good morning, Larry. Thanks for the show.
You bet.
I'm just headed up to the Porkies for 3 days of hiking, and so the timing of the show was great. I've been to Little Girl's Point, but that was a few years back. But anyway, it's just, as I recall, out of like Hurley, and then I can find it in the gazetteer. But anyway, I had a question about the different theories I've been hearing on for the lake being lower, and an interesting one I heard on Morning Edition had to do with the lack of ice cover, so we're having a lot more evaporation. And I wondered if you knew any more on that?
Mm. Yeah, the lake level is very interesting. The there's a group called the International Joint Commission. That's a Canadian-U.S. group that actually oversees all of the boundary waters between the two countries, and that includes the Great Lakes, of course. They've just started a study to figure out what's happening with the lake levels in general. Unfortunately, the study will not be completed until 2013, I believe. I think for Lake Superior, though, from the experts that I talk to, I suspect that what's happening with the lake level, the water levels for Lake Superior, is probably going to end up being a combination of various things. One of the big things for Lake Superior, you're exactly right, is ice cover. Now, it's very rare that Lake Superior is ever completely covered with ice, and when it is, it's actually for a few hours at most because of the movement of the lake and the size of the lake. It rarely completely is covered. But especially the last 3 to 5 years, has not had the normal ice cover it does. And what ice does is the Lake Superior is about 31,500, I believe, square miles, and so that's a lot of
area.
That's a lot of area to evaporate, because of course, what happens in winter is that the lake has accumulated energy during the summer, and it's warmer. The water temperature is warmer than the air temperature, and this is when you'll get some of the major evaporation. And so, it's very important for Lake Superior and its retention of water to have some kind of ice cover during much of the winter in order to keep the water in the lake and not to send it over to Buffalo as lake effect snow. And so there's the combination of that. We've actually had some mildly dry winters. We haven't had droughts. If you look at the annual precipitation, we haven't had major droughts, but during the winter it's been drier than usual. And when we have been getting precipitation, it's what we call lake effect, which is actually Lake Superior putting snow back in itself because the moisture is coming from the lake. The other thing, though, and this is one of the things that this International Joint Commission will be looking at first, is that there is some speculation that dredging quite a number of years ago in Lake St. Clair, which is a tiny lake connecting two of the Great Lakes, that there was dredging done there in order to accommodate maritime traffic, and that some of the dredging displaced the stones, making it mostly a sand channel that may be allowing more water through than historically would have been the case. So this is one of the reasons for this massive study. There's just so many potential things that could be affecting the lake levels.
Interesting. And I hadn't thought about lake effect snow from Superior to Buffalo, but I guess that happens, doesn't it?
It does indeed.
Thanks for calling, Gary. Appreciate your call. Connie LeMay, our guest today, editor of Lake Superior Magazine, talking about what's going on in and around Lake Superior. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890 or email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking all things Lake Superior today with Connie LeMay, editor of Lake Superior Magazine. Glad you joined in with us. And again, give us a call if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And Nick in Green Bay has a question for you, Connie, so let's go there. Hi,
great.
Nick.
Oh, my favorite place, Lake Superior. I lived in Gwynn, Michigan for 10 years. So the only thing I wanted to comment on was I was one of the lucky few that I got to see the albino deer at Presque Isle. And I was so opposed at them bringing in chirpers to kill a deer off. And that's, I love that park.
Oh.
It's quite the treasure for Marquette, Michigan. It's a peninsula that's a park, and it's a beautiful, gorgeous area. There were some problems with the deer population. The city felt there were too many deer for that particular area, and so they did cull back some of the deer. And, of course, many of the residents are familiar with the deer, and it did cause some very big concerns because they are very tame and almost feel like companions or domestic pets.
Sure.
Because they're so familiar.
Thanks, Nick. Mary in Menominee, Michigan. Hi to you.
Hi.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to add a couple of facts about Little Girls Point. It's
okay.
An extensive park along Lake Superior in Michigan, north of Ironwood. And the Lake Gogebic County, that's where Ironwood is, was very influenced by the state forests in Wisconsin and have something like 50,000 acres of state forest often managed for recreational use. So it's very beautiful. And the rock picking is great, and it's kind of old-timey.
Okay.
That was one thing. And the second thing was about the lake levels. And last year, I've lived in Hancock for a while. That's Houghton Hancock in the, mm-hmm. you know, where Michigan Tech is on the
yep.
Keweenaw Peninsula. And Lake, just a minute, the extreme ski hill at the tip of the Keweenaw didn't open until January 20th, that Mount Bohemia. That was just shocking.
January 20th?
January 20th.
Wow. So, Connie, not a lot of snow there.
No, much, much lower than our usual snowfalls. And like I said, for us, it's devastating because we have an entire economy, especially in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, based on snow. And there is snow available. It's just not in the the early parts of the year like we're used to and lasting quite as long. And but also, cold is very important for us, frankly. In Duluth, which is one of the few places where we have a substantial zebra mussel population in the harbor, which is an invasive species, of course, that is particularly devastating around the rest of the Great Lakes. And Lake Superior had managed to stave off a bad population of zebra mussels, in part because we would hit some of our cold weather right about the time the zebra mussels were ready to make baby zebra mussels. And so that often put a crimp into the growth of the population. But unfortunately, the last few years, we've had mild beginnings to the winter, and that has allowed the population here to increase much more than we'd like it to grow.
Hmm.
I should mention, too, that Little Girls Point, the one thing, and somebody might be able to help me more with this, too, but I believe that the name comes from a story about a little girl lost at that point, an Ojibwe story.
Mary,
that's so, and I don't know the details.
Yeah, but it so somebody else may have some details on that as well. Mary, thank you very much for calling. Doris has a question from Wausau, so let's go there. Hi, Doris.
That as well. Mary, thank you.
Doris, are you there?
Doris.
Doris?
Doris, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, what's on your mind?
Can you hear me?
You have to turn your radio down, Doris.
Okay.
And maybe we can get you back. Maybe we can get you back, Doris. We got to clean up that radio situation there. Kevin and Superior will go to you instead. Kevin, hello.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good, thank you for calling.
Okay, Little Gore Point, are you ready?
Okay.
Okay, you get on Highway 2, you go up to Saxon, by Saxon Harbor, and you take Highway 22, or 122, it takes you right through Wisconsin, and a lot of people don't know that Michigan meets Wisconsin there. They think they have to go through the town of Ironwood, but Michigan hooks up right there, and that's where Little Gore Point starts, about 5 miles into Michigan. It's very beautiful, very secluded. And it's an old Indian tale from like the early 1820s, where they had a tribe of Indians there, and one of the little Indian girls went on a canoe and never came back because she was captured by the lake people that the Indians feared so much, which is a myth, of course. And that's how the name Little Girl Point came around.
Kevin, thank you. We've got some more information there on Little Girl Point. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. You have Connie, you have a story on shipwreck diving in Lake Superior in your November issue that has a really nice photo by Tamara Thompson of the Wisconsin Historical Society. Do you know how many Lake Superior shipwrecks have been documented so far?
The number of wrecks that are still in the lake are estimated at between 350 to 500 wrecks. And of course, we're covering a long period of history, and
right.
So specific numbers are not quite as available. I have spoken recently with the Tom Holden, who is the director of the Lake Superior Maritime Visitor Center here in Duluth, and he had some very interesting figures that I thought were fun. He said when he talks about wrecks or accidents, ship accidents in Lake Superior, he uses three different numbers, basically. If you're talking about minor incidents from lost anchors to things that we'd be considered
minor.
He figures about 4,000 incidents like that over the course of maritime history. If you're talking about smacking an oar dock and putting a hole in the boat, you're probably looking at 2,000 to 2,500 different wrecks. But if you're talking about wrecks that actually went down and have not been recovered, because often a vessel might go down and then it will be recovered back from the lake if that's at all possible. But wrecks that continue to be in the lake, you're looking at between 350 and 500. And then of those, there's 50 or more that are considered disappeared, that were lost in the lake historically and have never been located. And so the wreck story that we had in the October-November issue was talking about the folks who go out looking at past records or newspaper reports of the time and try to find these missing wrecks.
And it's an interesting that with a really nice photograph. And of course, the wrecks, because of the coldness of the water, they stay in pretty good shape for a long time.
Yes, that's one of the amazing things about all of the Great Lakes, but Lake Superior in particular. It's a combination of fresh water, which is not as detrimental on especially steel ships as salt water is, and then also the coldness of the water does tend to keep a lot of the critters that eat things down. And so a lot of people, especially saltwater divers, we hear from constantly who come to Lake Superior for the first time and dive on wrecks and are just absolutely blown away at the condition of the wrecks that are found.
Yeah.
There's also, I'm not a diver myself, but there are also several wrecks on Lake Superior that you can actually see from the surface of the water. The Lucerne and the Nakwa Bay are by the Apostle Islands, and those can actually be seen from a boat on the water, as can the America, which is just off of Isle Royal.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah.
Eric in Madison, your turn. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Larry. Following up on the Little Girl Point, I did some archaeology up there, and during our historical literature search, the story that we came up with was there was two Indians out in a canoe, and they had seen a glowing green girl on the shoreline, and they followed her some distance, and she kept going farther and farther into the woods, beckoning them to follow. And so they got out, and they were pretty frightened, and they followed her into the woods for a while, and she eventually disappeared. And that's all we were able to come up with.
So that's your story, and you're sticking to it.
Yeah, well, it's a little different than the other ones, but I thought I'd throw my 2 cents in there.
Thanks, Eric.
Sure, no problem.
I appreciate it very much. Well, I didn't know we'd be talking so much about Little Girl Point today, but what the heck, you know, that's what people are interested in. We can talk about that. Janine in Sparta, we'll go to you now. Hi, Janine.
Hi. I just want to add my praises for the magazine, Lake Superior Magazine. I looked quick. It's one of those that I keep my back issues, and I can see that I've been subscribing since 1993.
Oh, my.
And give it as a gift subscription to family who lives in the Lake Superior up in Minnesota. I know we were there this fall, and on the page 34 and 35 in the current issue, they have a beautiful picture across Palisade Head, probably facing a little northeast, and Shovel Point is a place that we walk at least once a year way out to the point. So we've used it in travels to Michigan area, which we are not quite as familiar with as the North Shore in Minnesota. It's a beautiful magazine.
Oh, thank
people
you
look
very
at
much.
It and give it as a gift for Christmas.
Ah, thank you.
The magazine was started back in 1979, and it was started by a photographer. And I think that's one of the reasons we are still recognized as having wonderful photography, and we've been very blessed with having some really great photographers around the region. And, of course, the scenery doesn't hurt at all.
No, it certainly doesn't.
And even I can make good pictures around Lake Superior.
Oh, and Janine's right. The pictures you have on pages 34 and 35 are breathtaking. I don't know that I'd want to stand that close to the edge to take the picture.
Well, in fact, I think later, a little farther back in the issue, you'll find a story about someone who fell from Palisade Head. So, yeah.
Oh, ouch.
Yes, but had a happy ending, by the way.
Oh, well, that's good. I haven't read that story yet. I'll have to read that one. Well, and then I was looking at just a sort of totally kind of different picture in a way, Grand Sable Dunes in Pictured Rock National Lakeshore, Michigan. That is another fantastic picture.
Yeah, the scope of the lake, and of course, it sounds like a number of your listeners are very familiar with Lake Superior, but the scope of the lake always surprises people who have not been around the lake before. It is the horizon line. It takes up the sky, and you know, there are times. Like I said, I grew up around here, and I remember times when you really can't distinguish between sky and water, either because of the brilliant blues or during those times of hard fogs when you just suddenly feel like you're at the edge of everywhere.
And, you know, the Lake Superior Circle Tour, I believe, is about 1,300 miles long, starting in Duluth, and a good reference is Hugh Bishop's book, Lake Superior, The Ultimate Guide to the Region. And that's a wonderful book.
Yes, we have had, of course, this information for a long time. We've been putting out the Lake Superior Travel Guide, and we update that annually. But wanted to take some of that information, add some new stuff, and put it in a form that was alphabetically arranged so that people who were just making stops around the lake as well as doing the circle tour could have a good guide.
Yeah, it's a great guide, and Hugh, of course, very familiar with the lake.
Oh, yes. Hugh worked for the magazine for a number of years, and now is retired to Long Lake Superior.
Oh, my goodness. Well, again, you can join us if you have a question or comment at 1-800-642-1234 or in the Madison area at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call. In your Kichigami Almanac, the strong currents in Lake Superior are said to be sensitive to wind and wind direction. What's the Keweenaw Current, and how powerful is it? Do you know?
The Keweenaw Current, Lake Superior, is of course really a fascinating body of water, and one of the researchers we had spoken to at one time, I thought, put it very well. She said that Lake Superior is like an ocean in a test tube. It's got a lot of the attributes of an ocean, but it has definable borders. And so for researchers, of course, it's a particular fascinating body of water to look at. One of the things in the lake is this Keweenaw Current, which I kind of describe as an underwater or an in-water river. It flows along the flows to the northeast, kind of along the south shore of the lake, especially around the Keweenaw Peninsula in Michigan. And in terms of volume of water that it's moving, it is comparable to the Mississippi. They tell me it moves about 700 billion gallons of water a day, just like the Mississippi River does. And this current is particularly critical, they believe, in moving nutrients around the lake, like a blood, like blood flowing around your body. It helps to move the nutrients around the lake and keep the fragile system. Because the Lake Superior, though it's huge, in a lot of ways is like a desert in that it has a very fragile ecosystem in a lot of ways. And so that this current is one of the things that helps keep things moving and keep the ecosystem alive and well.
And you've got a nice, I like the diagram and the little story you have on it in your almanac. It's very, it's a great way to picture how the current works. And I like that a lot. Beth in Appleton has a question for you or a comment. So let's go to Beth. Hi, Beth.
I do. Hi. Hey, my blood just races when I hear someone talking about Lake Superior. So this show is just wonderful. I have to tell you, I live in Appleton, so it's a drive for me to get to the lake. But over the years, it has just meant everything to me and my family. Here's some of the things that I hope people could appreciate. I've done the circle tour, but more important, I've done dog sledding in January out onto the lake. We've done Isle Royale backpacking. We've been on probably 11 of the 22 Apostle Islands. My daughter went to college at Northland College in Ashland. We've lived in Duluth. We just love Lake Superior. And I guess what I want to say to people is so often we look for places to travel that are far and exotic, and I think there is nothing more exotic and wonderful than Lake Superior. I just have enjoyed so many moments that have meant everything to me and to my family. It set my daughter on a path of being interested in environmental studies, and we do not realize what kind of a resource we have in Wisconsin's backyard. And if people have not been to Lake Superior, they ought to put it on their 50 things to do list.
Well, now I'm envious. I mean, I love all the things that you've done.
Yeah, I always look for the next thing to do there, and my next goal is to winter on Madeline Island. So,
Madeline is in fact the only island occupied in the winter on Lake Superior with a regular resident population. So yeah, it's wonderful areas. It's very funny because my husband and I often find when we're planning our holidays or our vacation, we end up somewhere around Lake Superior because it is such a large lake, and there are so many places that it takes a lifetime to explore.
And I did want to mention before we run out of time, we still have some time left, but you have a website that people can go to if they want to subscribe, or an 800 number, I believe, as well.
Yes, and the website's pretty straightforward. It's www.lakesuperior.com.
Lakesuperior.com.
That's it. And the phone number is 888-BIG-LAKE or 888-244-5253.
244-5253 or 888-BIG-LAKE.
Lake. Yep.
All right. Beth, thanks again.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. And Beth in Stockholm, Wisconsin, we'll check in with you now. Hi, Beth.
Hello. I lived in Duluth for about 10 years, and I hadn't lived there long enough to get to know some of the areas around Duluth, but one of the things that I was really fascinated was the Hawk Ridge Bird Observatory, and I'm wondering if our guests could talk a little bit about how Lake Superior affects bird migration.
Hmm. Great, great question. And this is one of the major areas for birders because a couple of things happen. We end up being a migratory path, of course, from birds going between north and south. And there are a couple of, actually three points on Lake Superior that are excellent for raptor watching. In the spring at Whitefish Point, which is in Michigan, is a good place for raptors. Hawk Ridge in Duluth is especially good during the fall season, also in spring. And then in Thunder Bay, there is a point up along the bay where there's some very excellent birding. One of the things that happens with Lake Superior is because it's such a large body of water is that birds will come down and hit the, come to this large water and then branch off. And so it tends to funnel birds, which is why we get these terrific points where you can see lots of birds go by. A couple of years ago, you probably remember because it made national news, we had what they called an eruption of owls down around the lake area, and that was stunning.
Thank you very much, Beth, for calling. And Larry in Sheboygan, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Larry.
Hi. I'd like to ask your guest if she's ever heard of Lake Superior Surf Club, one of the premier surf spots, freshwater surf spots in the entire world, is on the western shore of Lake Superior called Stony Point. And right around the corner from that is Lester River. And the most hardcore surf club probably in the world is, to me and to others, Lake Superior Surf Club. Just a great group of guys, just up in that extremely cold water, but what a great group of hearty, big-hearted individuals that share the love of surfing. And people would be amazed to see footage of this place. And, of course, you can there's a movie out, Unsalted, documenting surfing on the Great Lakes. And the highlight of the movie is Stony Point, Lake Superior.
Interesting. Connie, comment?
Yes, well, thank you for helping me to sell the coming out issue. we have a small story actually with the guys from the surf club about a new guide that they've put out called Lake Superior Surf Guide of the North Shore, concentrating on the Minnesota shore and for surfing. Yes, they're not only hardy, they're very dedicated, and it is fascinating to see them out surfing in the water. And the lake surfing has some things that a lot of folks don't think about, which is in salt water you have a certain buoyancy because of the salt in the water. That is not the case in lake surfing, and so these guys deserve a lot of credit for getting out there. And of course the other aspect of it is that the best waves are in the cold seasons, so
yeah,
you'll get your best surfing in
really
December,
cold.
January, February, yeah, in the really cold months, and so they're extremely dedicated.
Well, Connie, you're dedicated too, and I want to thank you so much for being with us today. It was a lot of fun.
Well, thank you for the invitation and great guests, great questions.
I tell you what, we'll hopefully we'll get you back and we can do this again.
Wonderful. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you. And again, if you want to go on the website, to just go to lakesuperior.com, lakesuperior.com, or you can call them, find out some more information too at the 800 number, 888-244-5253, 244-5253, or just go to 888 Big Lake. It also means that. Connie LeMay, editor of Lake Superior magazine. Coming up, we're going to take a look at the issue of home foreclosures here in Wisconsin with Ken Doran. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.